in which investors will be willing to put more money in. I mean, capitalism is like a Ponzi scheme. It has to be constantly taking investments to continue to grow at least a 4% rate in order to be viable for investors. And that's its fundamental driving force. You know, the definition of capitalism that I actually love the most is Emanuel Wallerstein's definition. You know, the usual definition of capitalism is private ownership of the means of production rather than public ownership of the means of production. That's not really illuminative of what it really is. Wallerstein says, we're in a capitalist system when the system gives priority to the endless accumulation of capital. Endless accumulation is a quite simple concept. It means that people and firms are accumulating capital in order to accumulate still more capital, in order to accumulate still more capital, in order to accumulate still more capital, a process that's continual and endless. And, of course, that's a preposterous idea. I mean, that may have been possible when we had a lot of resources, but we're using up the resources. We're running out of resources on so many fronts right now. We're running out of arable soil. We're running out of climate. We're running out of oil. We're running out of clean, fresh water. We're running out of ocean. We're running out of wildlife. We're running out of forests. The natural resource depletion is just staggering. So the first most important problem of capitalism is that it's based on endless growth, and endless growth is a ridiculous, preposterous notion on a finite planet with limited resources. That's the first one. Probably that's the most important. The second one, though, is also very important, I think, is that capitalism is amoral. That is to say, it only has one purpose. Its only purpose is to grow and to accumulate wealth. Normal human beings and small businesses in a community can have other purposes. They can try to make things better for the community. They can try to do things differently. They don't have to be constantly pursuing this fantasy of endless growth. In the book, I used a term that I used once before in a book, in the Absence of the Sacred. I used a term, corporate schizophrenia. And what I'm talking about is, a lot of people these days talk about how greed is the problem. And there's a lot of conversation about greed right now. And my point is that individuals may be greedy, some of them are, and some of them are not. But once they get inside a capitalist structure, they have no choice but to be greedy. It's the structure that's greedy. You've probably seen the movie, or your listeners have probably seen the movie Avatar. I talk about it in the book.
Mm-hmm.
This is not a great movie, but there's a great scene in this movie, and it really is at the crux of the matter. This is about a corporate spaceship that's looking for more resources on a to feed the planet that's running out of resources, very much like our planet now. And it's looking around this space for other resources. It finds this planet far away that has tons of resources, and it says, okay, we're going to mine here. So it sends a group of people down to investigate, and they run into a lot of Indians. There are Indians there who've lived there for thousands of years. And they say to these Indians, listen, you got to get out of the way. We're going to mine here. You can't live here anymore. And so the Indians said, "We're not going to go away. This is our place. We've been here thousands of years. We live inside nature here. We're bound with nature. We're part of nature here. We're not going to leave." So the military guys who are down on the planet call up the corporate guy who's up in the spaceship, and he says, "Listen, they don't want to leave. They don't want to leave. What are we going to do? We have to get these resources." They're unwilling to leave. And the guy in the spaceship says, and this is the key moment in the film, I think, and it's one of the great, great moments of any film that I've ever seen. He starts a conversation with himself, and he says, They don't want to leave. They don't want to leave. Well, our shareholders really won't like it if we kill all these people in order to get them off our resources. On the other hand, they'll like it even less if we have a really bad quarterly financial report. So, yeah, okay, let's kill all these people. Let's drive.
And coming up next on Free Radio, Bathrop Spears Broadsides. It's April 4th, 2013. Stay tuned. We could be having some guests in the studio talking about Sin Baras, an upcoming protest against prison abuses in Santa Cruz and elsewhere. That will be having a get-together, speak-out march starting at the town clock at 4 o'clock on Saturday, this coming Saturday, day after tomorrow, and then heading to the Santa Cruz County Jail, where four prisoners have died in the last year around the same time as the medical care became privatized there. Stay tuned.
Oh, dear. These words, they may sound desperate. I may sound like a fool. My tongue runs like a motor at the risk of being cool. But what does it matter? You can dance or you can wander. You can act or you can ponder. Listen or ignore her, but when her eyes are open and looking into mine, how could I not tell her what is on my mind? What I tell you all the time. I'm fucking crazy, rolling in your arms, watching you leg wrestle through the night, wrestle for threatening me with harm. If I could say I love you, and you asked me not to stop, it wouldn't ever matter whether I'm a fool or not. 'Cause if you say you love me, and I am what you want, nothing else would matter, 'cause we are on the top. And I may not be the only breath made out of fire, but when I hold you and you hold me, I could not get higher. And I only wish to fly, and I want to see you soar with roots on ground unbroken. Who could ask for more? And these words, they may sound desperate. I may sound like a fool. My tongue runs like a motor at the risk of being cool. But what does it matter? You can dance or you can wander. You can act or you can ponder. You can listen or ignore her. But her eyes are open and looking into mine. How could I not tell her what is on my mind? What I tell you all the time, that I am fucking crazy. rolling in your arms, for watching you leg wrestle through the night and threatening me with harm. And if I could say I love you, and if you asked me not to stop, it wouldn't ever matter whether I'm a fool or not. Whether I'm a fool or not.
And that rather, is it a whiny lament, a simple lament, a soulful lament? You be the judge. That's from the album by Ben Lilla. And I don't know if it actually has a name, but it's one of those street musicians that I ran into, and now you're going to run into, too, occasionally. There's kind of a variety of numbers on this CD. You can find his work at Red Ben Lilla, all one word, redbenlilla@gmail.com, if you want to get in touch with him. Maybe give him a few pointers, who knows. Anyway, you're tuned to Free Radio, 101.3 FM. You can also catch the station on the stream by going to the Huff, Homeless United for Friendship and Freedom, Huff website, at huffsantacruz.org, and click on the link that begins with the words tune in. It's right under the words Bathrobes, Pierres, Broadsides, which is the name of this show. I'm Bathrobes, Pierre, and you get to hear my broadsides if you stay tuned in. You can also speak on the air yourself, respond, make announcements. Love to have some news updates if you have something. That's possible by calling in, 831-427-3772. 427-3772 is the call-in number. And you're invited, you know, call in. I'll be here till 8 o'clock, at which point Uncle Dennis will be coming on with From the Cream to the Dregs, aptly named show, actually, considering his location after my show. And he plays a lot of music from the 60s and 70s and has some Earth First-ish type updates. So stay tuned for that for 3 hours after my show. Other people who do shows like mine, or in some respects interview folks around, well, I think low-income issues, protest issues in Santa Cruz. Well, a lot of people on Free Radio do that. But particularly of note is the show that Coral and Free do on Tuesday. Runs from 6 to 9. I think Coral may be going on vacation for a while, so maybe Free will be doing it, maybe he won't. And then from 9 to 11, Brent Adams, a big drum Brent, as I've called him in the past, because he plays this huge drum downtown, or used to, which is sort of like a large white garbage, not a garbage pail because it's plastic, but it's a large 50-gallon container. Longtime community activist, one of the Santa Cruz 11, who's facing false charges, falsely prosecuted for First Amendment activity in the 75 River Street building, the vacant bank building that's still vacant and is still probably being squatted by poor and homeless people who aren't being charged with felonies, and nor should they be. In any case, his show is on from 9 to 11. It's called The Burning Flag on Tuesdays, right after Free and Coral's show, which is Tambourine Dream Team, if I'm not mistaken. And I think we have some other new broadcasters, too, and I apologize for not knowing who they are. A lot of other people do political shows here, too, as well. But I'd love to get a list of those shows, actually. If any broadcasters want to call in and announce their show times, particularly if their show times are about the kinds of subjects that are local political activism, invite you to do so. Please do call in. So I had a date with a couple of the prison reform or abolition or somewhere in there activists who I've had on the show before, who are going to be at a protest, as am I, on Saturday at the town clock starting at 4, as I mentioned earlier in the show. And they may be coming into the studio to talk about it. They had planned to, but they're really busy. They're up in the Bay Area. They're down here. They're running all over the place because there are prisons everywhere. The prison industrial complex is a huge billion-dollar industry, maybe a multi-billion-dollar industry. In fact, I'm going to read a little bit about what they wrote in their e-zine, which you can get online. One way to find out about all this is to go to Santa Cruz Indie Media and check out the stories there. Let's see if I can give you the exact address here. And I'm almost there. Let's see. I am having problems getting online for some reason. I'm not sure why. Ah, now I can understand why. Let's see. Anyway, the substance of the zine, which I was reading earlier, finding it very interesting, is it's named, as is their group, Sin Barras, which I guess means without bars, if I'm not correct, I mean, if I'm not mistaken. They talk about what is the prison industrial complex and some of this is of interest, but particularly of interest to me is the history of Santa Cruz County jails as they describe it. Their sources are the Pacific Sentinel, I guess, which is a precursor to the Santa Cruz Sentinel, the Santa Cruz Sentinel, and the Santa Cruz Sentinel. So the Santa Cruz Sentinel, well, that could be a questionable source, but they do quote from articles in the 1800s, and then Santa Cruz County Sheriff's Department as well, the probation department. Here's what relatively brief page on this, but still. History of the Santa Cruz County jails, they write. Some background is crucial to conceptualize or contextualize present injustices we are working to address. The historical development of Santa Cruz County jails follows an all-too-common pattern. Correctional facilities eat up a growing portion of the county's spending, and as the facilities themselves expand, the number of inmates who occupy them grows rapidly, despite actual crime rates. 3 years after the Union annexed California in September 1850, Santa Cruz County built its first prison of wood and sheet iron. On Mission Hill, where Holy Cross Catholic Church still stands after multiple renovations, the county jail was left unattended every night, never held more than a handful of inmates at a time, and escapes were common. That's according to the Pacific Sentinel, newspaper of the time, I guess. Santa Cruz County contracted the construction of a replacement facility to the lowest bidder at $3,600 in 1864, 14 years later. The project was quickly abandoned by the contractor, leaving the county to finish it. One of the famed founders and developers of Santa Cruz, Eli Anthony, described the new and upgraded facility as, quote, one of the best in the state, being secure against the most determined acts of desperados. The new gates and locks, to which Anthony referred to, however, only ensured security for certain populations. In 1877, 150 Santa Cruz locals broke in and lynched Francisco Arias and Jose Chamales at the Water Street Bridge. Mariano Hernandez faced the same violence at the hands of the Santa Cruz community 2 decades prior. Throughout the 19th century, the county jail served to suppress what the white community perceived as a threat to complete control of the region. In the 1936 construction of the Front Street Jail, we see the seeds of how prison expansion operates today. As the jail neared completion, the population was, quote, dropping away so fast, the sheriff and aides were fearful there would not be enough left to make a credible showing by the time the prison was accepted, unquote, causing the sheriff to consider staging a roundup in the jungles, private bingo parties, or drafting prominent citizens to stand in for prospective prisoners to make for a grand opening. The jail opened with 38 inmates and was overcrowded 3 years later by 1939, holding 82 inmates. The current jail on Water Street in Santa Cruz, which was built in 1981, continues these legacies of inhumane conditions and racism. In Santa Cruz, African-American drug offenders served the highest proportion of time in jail, followed by Latinos and whites. Latinos served the longest sentences for felonies, African Americans for misdemeanors. Whites, who accounted for 67% of drug felonies and 74% of drug misdemeanors, served the shortest time in jail overall, regardless of offense type. Those who have been inside report overcrowded cells with no ventilation, development of skin discoloration, and describe the food as pink slime. Inmates are ignored when requesting assistance and are forced to take unknown medications and put in lockdown for refusing them. One person wrote online, "What I saw were many young, wonderful people stuck in a never-ending system, many left homeless as a result." Angela Davis discusses how prisons are so entrenched in our society that we think of mass imprisonment as inevitable, a natural fact of life. If we trace the history of prisons and the conditions of their expansion, we will see that this is not the case. Prisons don't have to expand, therefore we have the power to stop them. While government officials propose new jails as a solution to overcrowding, we know that more prisons and policing will not make our communities safer. And this, of course, is one of the basic tenets of this organization, as well as a profound belief that the real purpose of jails, and this is what they discuss, the prison industrial complex, is to preserve the authority of people who get their power through racial, economic, and other privileges. And you can either agree with that or disagree, but certainly a very provocative thesis and set of facts. And there'll be speakers on Saturday afternoon at 4 o'clock, some from inside the jail or who have been in the jail, some from other cities. I think there's a speaker from HUF, Homeless United for Friendship and Freedom, who will be discussing the impact and significance of and the abuses around county jail, which also the main focus that I heard about initially from Tosh and Courtney, the two women who may be showing up later in the show, is that there have been four deaths, as I mentioned earlier, in the last 9 or 10 months, coinciding with the privatization of the so-called medical services in the jail. There's also a very provocative graph here, which shows the number of inmates in a bar graph between 1925 and 2012, starting around, this is in the U.S. state federal prison population. It started at 200,000 in 1925, and it went up to 1.6 million in 2012, and it has increased over 800% in 40 years. And, of course, we have a significantly larger population in the country, but we sure don't have an 800% increase. We have a lot more things, of course, have been declared criminal. And one has to ask, has the country become safer since 1925? I mean, middle of Prohibition era, perhaps. This is a significant, you know, and again, there are all kinds of other factors. Safer for African Americans who got to get lynched with more impunity in those days. Anyway, it's an interesting question. Also in the zine, there's other stories, a broader picture of California prisons, who's inside, what is the prison abolition movement, and speak out in March, April 6th. In July 2012, the Board of Supervisors in Santa Cruz voted to outsource county jail medical services to Monterey-based California Forensic Medical Group. Since then, at least four inmates, all charged with nonviolent offenses, have died in the Santa Cruz County Jail. California Forensics Medical Group provides inmate medical services for 25 California counties and has an extensive history of lawsuits against them related to inadequate care, inmate abuse, and neglect. This is an allegation that was also made by these two women, or at least one of them, when they were in the studio. I think it was on Sunday. Could have been on last Thursday. And I haven't seen the stats, but that's what's being claimed here. We demand that Santa Cruz County officials provide real health care within county jails and police brutality, eliminate pretrial detention, and reallocate prison funding to create drug treatment centers and welfare programs outside of Santa Cruz County Jail. It's a 4 p.m. rally on Saturday, downtown Santa Cruz Clock Tower, North Pacific and Water Street. And there's a prisoner's hunger strike that has been going on inside Pelican Bay State. It'll be beginning again on July 1st. support the five core demands, end group punishment and administrative abuse, abolish the debriefing policy, and modify active-inactive gang status criteria, comply with the U.S. Commission on Safety and Abuse in America's Prisons 2006 recommendations regarding an end to long-term solitary confinement, provide adequate and nutritious food, and expand and provide constructive programming and privileges for indefinite SHU status inmates. Hunger strikes to resume July 8th. There's a reading list, a list of resources in this zine, a Know Your Rights listing, probably familiar to a lot of people who have been studying these issues. It's particularly difficult in Santa Cruz to know what your rights are, and even if you know them, to assert them, as I've talked about at length on this show. If you want to find this, you can go to sinbarras.wordpress.com, sinbarras.wordpress.com, or you can reach them at sinbarras, 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 @gmail.com. And now let's roll into some street interviews, which I'll be interrupting liberally with commentary, which is my usual approach. You can also give a call with your commentary, your objections, your thoughts, your reactions, your stories. 427-3772 is the call-in number here. Area code 831-427-3772. Going to begin... Where are we going to begin here? Let's see. This is, I'm going to have to let you know in a moment where we're at as I take my own bearings in this tape. So here we go.
Anything you notice on the streets tonight you want to comment on, or something happening in Santa Cruz you think needs to be mentioned?
This is an interview that I did on the streets in front of the Del Mar Theater one evening about a week ago with a guy called Sam I Am, a fellow whose face was tattooed, who had a little white cat on his shoulder that I guess her name was White Noise. And he had been assaulted by four men 4 or 5 days before, and I gave a very extensive and gruesome description of how that happened and how what kind of bad treatment he got, both from Dominican Hospital and from the police, and kind treatment from other homeless people who tried to help. And in spite of all that, what I was struck by was Sam I Am's really positive approach, not just toward me, but when I came up to him, he was talking with a mother and a father and several young children who were kind of petting the white cat on his shoulder and talking to him. He wasn't seeking money, he was just talking to them. And it was really quite striking and quite touching. Here he is concluding the interview I had with him, and let's listen.
From just random intel, the intelligence that I've gathered talking to random people that I know and other people that I have no idea who the hell they are most of the time, but they just come up and talk to me. From about 1 week before St. Paddy's Day to about a week after St. Paddy's Day, there was a long stream of random hate crimes against people on the street. One of my friends happened to get the crap beat out of her, cut up with razors, and gang raped. Another one of my friends was...
When and where was that, you know?
I don't know, because she completely lost her mind in the trauma of all the violence, and you can't get a straight sentence out of her for anything.
Do you want to say her name or not?
Her name's Jessica. Other than that, I don't know any more of her name or whatever, but she's just completely lost it.
And did anybody witness this, or she told this to you at some point, or?
No, actually, she did tell me parts of it, but someone else told me that had been basically babysitting her for, you know, several days after the fact.
You know where it happened?
I have no idea.
And you say that's part one of a string. What else have you noticed?
There's just been people getting the crap beat out of them while they've been sleeping, or
How many have you actually heard about specifically?
Approximately 11.
11 individual accounts, or?
Yes, 11 individual accounts.
Men, women, mostly men?
Men and women.
And these are people in the downtown area, out in the wilderness?
Mainly around the downtown area, anywhere from the flats to the clock tower.
And does this happen with groups of people approaching them or individuals?
Usually about four people from what I've figured out.
Now, I heard it mentioned that these individuals who assaulted you were Hispanic people?
Yes.
And did they seem to be upper middle class, lower middle class, lower class? In other words, did you get any sense of their economic? Were they, college graduates out for a spin? Were they gang members from Guatemala? I mean,
I would say that they're possibly somewhere between blue collar and white collar, and possibly gang members anywhere from Salinas to Watsonville, or even San Jose, just hanging out down here. Maybe that they even live down here now, but they're just out to be rambunctious assholes.
Any sense of in these assaults as to whether they're coming mainly from locals or people from out of town?
You know, I'm not 100% certain on that. It could be either. They have had that Take Back Santa Cruz thing going on, where a lot of the locals are just basically fed up with people either panhandling or traveling through town due to the factor that, this has always been a nexus for travelers and a tourist town. And, you know, the tourists come to see Santa Cruz, and they also come to see some of the travelers, you know, because we keep Santa Cruz weird. And
we have seen with you and your famous kitty, whose name is?
White Noise.
Sorry about that. Sorry, White Noise.
But, no, it's always been, you know, a tourist town, and people travel through and visit and this and that, and some people stick around a little bit longer because they love Santa Cruz. And, you know, there's the street musicians and the random people that are just really interesting, and they attract attention by tourists, locals, and obviously the Santa Cruz PD.
Any response by the PD, the hosts, or private security guards to you and your White Noise friend?
The police really haven't even talked to me other than mentioning, oh my god, he has a cat on his shoulder, or he has face tats, or the
hospitality... How would you describe your face tats, by the way?
The hospitality crew, I'll get to that in a moment.
Sorry.
The hospitality crew have been very, very hospitable. They're very nice people. The first alarm people who walk around and patrol Pacific Avenue and some of the surrounding areas have been very, very kind and considerate, and worried about some of the things they've seen and heard lately.
In terms of how the
face tattoos on the other side, they're just it's a colorful reflection of a lot of people that I've met randomly across the country. I have about 5 to 7 different tattoo artists on my face, me being one of them. And
you are yourself a tattoo artist.
Yes, I am a traveling tattoo artist. I can't even do any tattoo work because my hand is so messed up right now, which has been putting me out of pocket, because that's normally what I do when I travel, is I do tattoo work.
Has anybody in the homeless community at all, insofar as it's a community, come together to help you at all? Or?
Oh, most definitely. More of the homeless community has helped me in more ways than the local authority or even the hospital, in a sense. And that's just due to the factor that I think we've all lived on that same page, being homeless for so long, that they're just like, oh, wow, that sucks, you know? Like, are you all right today? How are you feeling? How's your back, you know? And I have a few friends that usually are accompanying me later in the evening when things sometimes have a tendency to get a little rowdier. And since my injury, they basically walked me around and made sure that no one's attacked me. And then we just go camp somewhere randomly and try to sleep the night away.
And Sam, I am reported in an earlier part of this interview, which I played in a prior show, which you can actually get by going to the Huff website, huffsantacruz.org, and clicking on the archives. He reported that his back was fractured by an attack by these four guys, one of whom they actually just took his hat, smashed him and with a skateboard, and also slashed him with a knife, cutting his, severely injuring a finger, so he was bleeding all over the place by his account. Those are the injuries he's suffered and that he's referring to.
And tomorrow's another day.
Saturday, in fact. Thank you for taking the time to give us the whole story, or at least part of it.
What I can remember.
And we have been talking with, of course,
Sam I Am.
Thank you, Sam I Am. And we're back at the New Leaf Music Stand. This time the number of musicians has increased. Another guitar has joined the guitar, banjo, and spoon man. And there's a group of listeners. One woman is evil. Brianna, it looks like, is actually sitting down eating within 14 feet of a building, the closed New Leaf building. Fearless as ever. So we have another sign here on the man with many signs. Miracle Please is one of his signs as he leans against the bench here in front of the Forever 21. Two associates seeking a little food as folks walk by with leftovers. And, of course, he has his famous can't help, or no, can't sleep, homeless will eat me. Aren't you afraid of possibly you were saying the police were going to eat you. Now, you're talking about the homeless police force? I haven't heard there are any homeless.
No, just in terms of creating a situation where people can't sleep anywhere, so they're starting to get aggravated with each other, and there's more fighting and negativity going around because people aren't getting rest.
Now, have you heard of anybody being assaulted in the last week on the streets? I just read a report of an upsurge of assaults. Is that actually true in your view?
Yeah, I've seen some violence.
What?
More than usual. More than usual.
Is it homeless on homeless or housed on homeless?
Yeah, both. My friend got stabbed. He got cut. His fingertips got cut off.
You're talking about Sam I Am?
Yeah.
Actually, it was the person I just talked with. Any other reports?
Not that I can recall at the moment, but I'm sure there were others I heard of.
And have you gotten sleeping tickets yourself recently?
No. I haven't. I've been clever enough to stay out of the way, but
out of the searchlight, so to speak.
For the most part, yeah.
Out of the Klieg lights.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
Fair enough. well, I will allow you to do your good work, or hopefully, wish you get something to eat.
Yeah.
We've been talking with
Hugo.
Thank you.
Thank you.
So we have a rapper rapping away in front of Marini's.
Straight from the lesson. Do it like this, man. You know it's a blessing. We recording. Gotta spread like global warming. Whenever we absorbing all the molecules and chemicals that are brought, doing whatever we can do to teach the hip hop. Y'all stay tight, straight from the one love. They'll be taking a me from up above. So I fly out, do whatever I can do to stay Oh, but I don't need to smoke on no endo. Gotta just do it like this crescendo in our silhouette. I feel like we can just stay off here all day.
He never quits.
And that is me, so you can one day see me on that.
I've been listening to the music of the repetition of my goodness, can I read this card? It looks like Andrew is the man.
That's who is I am, and that's me, but I go by Amplify. Soul Express, if you'd like to really reply and give me your email address, but I guess it's on that card. So either way, man, I'll know who you are someday, and
you'll hear yourself on the radio on a Sunday. The man with the story and tarot cards in front of the closed Dale Williams.
Yeah, just had cops harassing me. Yeah, they haven't really messed with me for like, it's almost been like 6 months, but the same cop that's always driving downtown decided to stop and tell me I couldn't be here after dark and I couldn't do this without a license, which is not true because I've read the ordinance fully.
Now, we spoke about this. Was this an earlier incident or was this a new incident?
Oh, this was earlier about an old incident. This is new. It's fresh.
So you've been told you couldn't do this. It was panhandling. It was after dark.
I didn't say it was panhandling. You said I couldn't have a table after dark.
And so you went, found the law, and determined that no, I can. It's legal. And so this is it. But and since then, you weren't disturbed until recently.
Yeah. I mean that this was just about. He did this probably like half an hour ago.
In the name of this police officer?
I didn't ask his name.
What did he look like?
It's an Asian guy. He's about the only Asian guy on the force downtown, I'm pretty sure.
What did he say to you?
He just told me I needed a license to do this, but I said I was doing it by donation, religiously. It was a charity. And he just kept going, no, well, you should go talk to the city. I'm not going to give you a citation today.
How nice of him.
Yeah. So nice.
So is this...
The city does not give licenses for almost any kind of activity on Pacific Avenue unless it's connected with leasing a piece of property or an existing store. And it's just misinformation from the police department, I think, that if they claim that's otherwise. Although, you know, I can always be educated, but that's my understanding. Also... It's not illegal to have a table after dark on the mall, provided you're not obstructing it and the sidewalk. And since the sidewalks on Pacific Avenue are 20, sometimes 30 feet wide on one side of the street, which is where this guy was, near Dale Williams Jeweler, he was being told a tale. And this officer was improperly trying to deny him his right to be there and to drive him away. Sound familiar, folks?
Put a chill on your ability to do your tarot reading?
Yeah, it's not. I mean, I need to be at peace and relaxed when I'm doing this. And early in the year, it was the same way where I'd come down here and the cops driving back and forth, and I'd be like, when are they gonna stop me? Like when I'm in the middle of a reading, it's just. I mean, it sends your adrenaline up. You know what I mean, and it's not a good feeling. And I know that they don't know what they're talking about. And, yeah, I don't feel like going to court. I mean, I'll go if I have to, but...
I remember we spoke about this, and I was impressed that you stood your ground. You successfully brought the code and showed it to them. I suppose you could show them the code again. Did he say there... He didn't even say there had been a complaint, right?
No. He just stopped.
Did he double park his car on the street?
Yeah, he just parked it on the street and just walked over. I mean, I'm thinking possibly to go to the police station and talk to the sergeant, have him go over and maybe like sign it, the ordinance. I don't know if that...
I'd be curious to have, you know, one thing you can do is if a cop comes up and asks, wants to write you a citation... this is what I would do, but again, I'm, you know, when one doesn't know what the outcome is necessarily, ask, say, I'd be happy to sign this citation, but I'd like to talk to your sergeant first, and ask for the sergeant to come down to talk to you. And I don't know that you have a right to do that. I think, but still, it's, you know, you're not refusing to sign. You're saying, I will sign, but I need to talk to the sergeant about this. The other thing is, if they try to do it to you during the day, you can ask to be taken to a magistrate before they do for a probable cause hearing. I'll get up so you can actually get some business done here in a minute. I'm lounging in one of your chairs.
Right. Oh, okay. Yeah. So you said talk to a magistrate.
Well, they will. There's a provision. provision of both the California's law and also the Santa Cruz police general orders that requires them, if you ask, to be taken to a magistrate if the courts are open. So it has to be done on a weekday during the daytime, like between 8 and 4, at which point they will usually, you know, I don't know what they'll do, because very few people ask to do it. Last time I saw it used was about 10 years ago. But it is a way of telling them, essentially, you're engaging in activity that is not justified by the law. You don't have any probable cause. There's no reason for me to sign a citation or go to court. If you want to take me to court, let's go right now and take it to a judge. The judges are often very sympathetic to the police, but if you actually have a code section that shows, they'll probably pull out the no fortune-telling section of the Santa Cruz Municipal Code.
Yeah.
But tarot card reading, you know, I guess I've seen it done so often across the street by another individual, you know. I want you to keep me informed of everything that's going on so I can report your adventures, misadventures, and triumphs, hopefully.
Yeah, yeah. No, I'm going to be down here no matter what.
Well, you know, as you probably know, and I'll give you my card again, Huff. Homeless United for Friendship and Freedom, which is also concerned with the rights of street performers and street activists and, you know, people who are on the street. We meet every Wednesday at 10 o'clock at the Sub Rosa, 703 Pacific, so you're welcome to wander on into that, too.
Thank you.
And we've been talking with
Tito.
Thank you, Tito. Here's a man.
And Tito actually talked to me again, and I recorded an interview, which I don't think we're going to get to today, but we might. Tito actually apparently did, when approached by the police again, simply insisted that he had the right to be there, that there was no law that prohibited him from doing it, and he kept demanding to see the sergeant. The sergeant came down, and by Tito's account, this is all according to Tito, the sergeant then either told him or the officer told him, you are right, we're wrong, we're moving on. And that was the most refreshing thing I'd heard in quite a while. Again, it was Tito's story. I guess it was last night he told me that as I was kind of doing a follow-up. This interview you just listened to was on March 29th, about a week ago, last Friday. Let's hear some more from last Friday.
Actually tuning up his guitar in front of the Santa Cruz Coffee Roasting Company, which is, of course, criminal behavior in beautiful Santa Cruz. Another woman is hugging a man standing on the eve of a planter, which is also criminal behavior. There are criminals up and down Pacific Avenue on this Friday night. Actually, that's very heartening, considering the kind of expressions of natural free expression that are happening. And perhaps it's because it's a Friday night, we have more guitarists guitaring in front of IT Sugar next to O'Neill's. I don't know if I would agree with the musical repertoire. It's washboard, guitar, and mandolin.
La 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 la.
Now, March 30th, 2013, I'm here at the post office on a Saturday. The rain is trickling down. And
the Holy Grail's here.
And the Holy Grail.
Rainbow and rainbow.
Not to mention the holy food and the salad. And food is being served at the place it was served at sometime before.
This is a Food Not Bomb Saturday serving, which you'll hear for the first time in about 6 weeks, or maybe 5 weeks, 4 weeks. Returned to the eaves under the area under the eaves of the post office because it was raining. In the past, when they did this, they were accosted by a postal official who demanded they leave and called the police, and the police first were kind of noncommittal about it. Then the next time they said, we're taking pictures to see if the DA wants to prosecute you. And that threat apparently intimidated the Food Not Bombs people into moving onto the sidewalk, where they remained for about 4 or 5 weeks until the rain on this Saturday, last Saturday, drove them back to their original spot.
Which is underneath the eaves of the post office. We have about, 40 or 50 people here eating, including the infamous, hi, Raven, here you are enjoying a meal for Food Not Bombs. Do you feel disturbed that you're sitting on the steps of the post office and that Food Not Bombs has returned to the area from which it was barred some weeks ago?
As long as people let me eat, I'm happy.
I see. Well, I don't see any postal inspectors yet beginning to...
I saw him inside. He was looking at it, so he wasn't too happy looking, but I think he understands that, hey, it's raining, and if he's going to bother us for eating while it's raining, I'm going to get in his face.
Well, good for you. Any reports from the street otherwise we should hear about?
Nothing particularly interesting this week so far. I managed to make some money before the rain started, so I'm happy.
With your massage or with your street spirits?
This time with the massage. It was too cold yesterday. I tried to sell some street spirits and I couldn't do any massage, but no takers on the newspapers.
Well, there should be a new street sheet arriving within a few days, so that could be something you might or might not want to pass on to the community.
And Street Spirit is a newspaper, as is Street Sheet. Both of them come out of the Bay Area. They're sold by homeless people up there and down here for necessaries or whatever they want to spend the money on. And I encourage people to take a look at them. The Street Sheet comes out twice monthly. It's put up by the Coalition on Homelessness. Street Spirit is a monthly publication put up by the American Friends Service Committee. The next issue, or actually the current April issue, will have a long article about activist Linda LeMaster with an update by her on her court case, where she was defending, well, essentially the right to peacefully protest on behalf of homeless people who have in Santa Cruz no legal place to sleep at night. There are, you know, rather dreary, not dreary isn't the word, shelters about which some complain they are very wretched, and you'll hear some of those complaints tonight on this, on if I get to this, those portions of the tape. But even if people wanted to go to the shelters, there's shelter for less than 5 or 10% of the homeless population. And there's a sleeping ban after 11 o'clock at night until 8:30 in the morning. Also a blanket ban on covering up with or laying out blankets. And there's also a 24-hour-a-day camping ban. Setting up a campsite, that may mean so such a simple thing as laying down a sleeping bag, with the intention of remaining overnight, depending on the interpretation of the police officer or whether you tell him or her, I'm going to be spending the night here, in which case that can be construed as a violation of that section of the camping ordinance. All these laws, of course, are unconstitutional and basic human rights violations and abusive intrusions and contradictions to basic religious ethical dictates of all the major religious superstitions, whether they're Christianity or Judaism or Islam or paganism or you name it. They're in our society, I guess, the religion of money, commercialism, and the gentrification movement is God here, and therefore it rules. Linda LeMaster, well, the story about her struggle to fight back against 647E, the law that is used by the police mainly to break up protests, but also to go after homeless people at different points, but it's a misdemeanor, and so that can require a jury trial, which doesn't seem to be too much defense, at least not in recent cases, with the cards stacked through judicial constriction of evidence, interpretation of the law. It's a law that says if you lodge anywhere without the consent of the owner or the person in custodialship of the property on any public property. And I thought the people owned the public property. Yeah, well, it turns out that depends on what bureaucrat the bureaucrat of the day is, and it's an impossible situation for a person any time that authorities want to go after an individual under 647E, in Santa Cruz anyway. I haven't heard of convictions for 647E in other jurisdictions much. In fact, I've heard of convictions being overturned through the use of the necessity defense, the defense that says even if you're guilty of a law, if you did your action to prevent a greater evil and you had no other reasonable alternative, then you cannot be found guilty. It's called an affirmative defense. So you plead guilty, but then you say, I will show by preponderance of the evidence, 51% plus, that there was a greater evil that I was acting to avoid. It's used in cases like if you escape from prison in the middle of a fire. Well, you know, it's a crime to escape from a prison, but the fire would be a greater evil because then you'd be committing suicide if you didn't... something like that. Or if you help people get out of a prison, and that would normally be considered, aiding and abetting a prison escape. But under the necessity defense, and that's something that homeless people have successfully used in different places, and the threat of it has even been more effective because in Santa Cruz, for instance, I think it persuaded the city attorney in 2010, after 3 months of homeless protests, tip of the hat to Ground Zero Gary Johnson and Ed Fry, the attorney, and a lot of other activists who stood their ground, Kerbugger Chris Doyen, also known as Commander X, who protested nightly and daily in front of the county building and then in front of City Hall. And City Attorney John Barisoni decided he would put into the camping law a provision that says if you are on a waiting list for the Homeless Lack of Services Center, or the Homeless Services Center as they like to call themselves, or the River Street Shelter, or the River Street Mini Shelter, as I call it, since the total number of beds available 8 months a year, both these places doesn't go beyond 100 if you add them both together. And you're almost invariably on a waiting list. You can't go to find shelter there on any particular night. It's not really an alternative. But if you are on the waiting list, simply on the waiting list, then your tickets won't even have to go to court for the necessity defense for you to prove that it was you had to sleep outside, because if you didn't fall asleep, you would suffer the rigors of sleeplessness, the health implications of not getting sleep at night. And that actually has been an adequate defense, in case as shown by the state ICORN decision from about 13 years ago. Camping laws were ruled constitutional, unfortunately, not unconstitutional, under a prior decision called the Tobe case. But then they said, well, you can use the necessity defense. In fact, you have a right to use the necessity defense if you're homeless and you're trying to sleep somewhere. And they say, no, you're violating laws A, B, C, and D wherever you go. Well, then I have a necessity to violate those laws. And so Attorney Barisoni, our city attorney, decided to perhaps avoid a potential lawsuit or a lot of bad publicity, or maybe he developed a soft spot in his heart. It's hard to know actually how this law came about, but it may be a law to essentially toot the horn of the Homeless Lack of Services Center and increase publicity for it, or increase the number of people who are seeking shelter there. You can't get shelter there much. 46 people can every night at the Pauley Loft, and until April 15th, which isn't very far away, 100 people can do so every night at the Winter Armory Shelter. But since there are 1,500 to 2,000 homeless people in the city alone, that has nothing to do with any real attack on the emergency shelter crisis. So getting on a waiting list, if that's going to immunize you from citations, that certainly is a good thing. And you might say, well, hats off, but it also encourages people to go to those particular privately run shelters. And it kind of is a strange collusion between a private group and the city government, where they simply single out these particular shelters as the only place on whose waiting list you have to be. Note that you don't have to have shown you went to get a bed and were turned away. All you have to do is to show that you were on the waiting list. So this gives these organizations a special kind of privileged position, which I I notice is, you know, kind of shady. Other organizations should have a similar. You should, if you're on the waiting list of any shelter, you should be able to have your ticket dismissed under this strategy if the government wants to remain neutral and not be a special booster of the homeless lack of services center and the River Street mini shelter. However, the fact that any organizations are mentioned at all seems better than none, or so it did seem to me 3 years ago. The problem that came about was we couldn't get the Homeless Lack of Services Center's boss, Monica Martinez, to issue public statements, one, that they had utterly inadequate shelter, which would protect people who weren't on their waiting lists for one reason or another, but they, in essence, you know, were still getting ticketed, and they had to go to court to show that there was no shelter that night or that generally there was no shelter in the area. We couldn't get her to say that, even though it's clearly true, and it was acknowledged, she acknowledges it privately. But she won't. She, you know, she doesn't want to make a public statement. Apparently, she's. It's hard to say why. Maybe she's afraid of embarrassing the police department, which wants to keep the sleeping ban as a tool, in order to interrogate people late at night because of all these, you know, criminals that are out in the homeless camps, needle using, knife wielding, bloodthirsty homeless folks who are just out there ready to rape and. Loot and that sort of thing. They're just, you know, waiting to come down and descend on the city and panhandle and smoke marijuana and do all these evil things, you know, which we know homeless people are particularly adept at. So, hope you catch the dryness in my voice. This was called ironic commentary. That's what the actual subtext, I think, of a lot of this Take Back Santa Cruz stuff is. And they like to say, oh no, it's crime, it's crime, we want to get rid of crime. And we want safety for all the homeless people, and we're going to get them safe by, you know, having the police destroy their camps. That's a great safety measure. It's actually a way, of course, of the old tradition of driving away the stranger, driving away the poor people, driving away the bums, the Okies, the Chinese, the Negras, you know, the Spics, the Wops, the Jews, getting rid of them all because we're more comfortable with a gated, purified community. And in this case, it's an economic purification that they're looking for and that they're doing. If you have any comments on any of this, you think perhaps I'm giving poor Take Back Santa Cruz a bad rap, not being fair to them, please call in 427-3772. 427-FRSC is the number to call. And all this riff comes from my talking about a story in Street Spirit that will be coming out shortly. You'll be able to read it within a week. I should have these Street Spirits in hand, and you may actually be able to get one or two from, I think the Sub Rosa may have them. They'll be a copy in the public library. If you see this strange bumper sticker covered car downtown, it's probably mine, and you can come up to me and say, hey, you got a Street Spirit? And it's usually what you should do is give a dollar to a homeless person if you take a Street Spirit, or better still, buy them from homeless people who can then, you know, go huddle out of the rain for an hour or an hour and a half. I think it's 2 hours that I was told at the Santa Cruz Diner. They allow a homeless person to nurse a cup of coffee there, depending on how favorable an impression they make. It's a nerve-wracking existence. I've been a long time since I've done that, but it has happened to me in the past, a long time ago. So, let's go back to the Food Not Bombs shindig on Saturday. That'll be happening again day after tomorrow, actually about the same time as the Sin Baras protest at the town clock, protest against the prison abuses in the local jail and in jails across the state. Food Not Bombs every week serves from 4 to 5:30 and then Occupy Santa Cruz has its small but mighty or mighty small meeting. And they get together talking about sanctuary campgrounds, they're talking about protest campgrounds, they're talking about just campgrounds and what to do in response to this massive attack on homeless, the small homeless services that exists, this attempt to demonize and homeless people and make self-righteous vigilantes who somehow feel that they're cleaning up the environment by mowing away homeless people, which is really kind of crazy thinking. Let's hear some more.
Cool.
Steve Plage, I understand you have some thoughts on needle exchange, which you recently...
I already expressed them. I'm not going to express them again.
Any summary you wish to give?
No, I don't have any summary.
I'm sorry to hear it. Thank you.
There's a man who's shooting up on the steps of the post office, but it's insulin he's shooting up with. Are you have you been disadvantaged at all by the latest needle exchange brouhaha?
I've been disadvantaged, yes, because a lot of people know that I am a diabetic, and I've had people ask me to buy needles from me, and it's hard to say no. But I promote the needle exchange program. I would participate in it if I could, but I'd have to. I would be cut off if I would ever give out a needle to a drug addict. But it's a shame that they don't have any.
Do you get a one for one, or do you get a number of needles because you need to? How frequently do you need to inject?
Well, three times a day, and I recycle the same needle for about 2 days, and that reduces the number of needles I need.
But is that a safe process? Shouldn't you use a clean needle every time you shoot?
No, I'm just for myself, and I'm not sharing the needle, so I'm not giving myself anything. It's just the needle gets dull, and eventually I have to discard it. But they don't give a whole lot of needles at the clinic where I go to, so I have to conserve.
And this is not needle exchange, but a private clinic you use?
Yeah. I go to the Homeless Persons Health Project, and they provide me with my supplies.
And do they dispose of needles that you bring and give you fresh ones?
At this point, I wrap my needles up and in an indiscreet bag and throw them away. There's no way on the street for me to be carrying around a big bag of empty needles, and finding recycling options for them is kind of a...
You aren't able to safely dispose of your needles.
I am not, no. The proper way would be to find a local place to do that, but then I'd have to carry a bag of needles in my backpack, which, along with everything else, you know, it's just too much.
And what about the Emmaline needle exchange every week? Aren't there a couple of needle disposal units in various places?
Yeah, there are. If you're calling me on it, then yeah, I'm not disposing of my needles properly. I suppose I should do that.
I'm going to tell Take Back Santa Cruz about you.
Okay.
Is there any way you could be? Would there be an inducement? Should people be, kind of kicking you down cash to dispose of your needles in a safer way?
It would be a half-hour walk to and from Emmaline just to dispose my needles, and I'd rather spend that time finding food and shelter and trying to get a job.
And we've been talking with
an unnamed person.
Thank you, UP.
If I say my name on your radio show, all the heroin addicts are going to want to come get my needles.
Not to mention Take Back Santa Cruz to denounce you for your needle unsafety.
Yeah, right.
Well, I'd be concerned about it too, but I think I hear what you're saying. I'm going to move on and not think too deeply about what you're telling me.
Oh, indeed.
Thank you. Steve Plage, is there a place one can dispose of needles downtown? Are there needle disposal sites?
Yes, there are. Look on smartsolutions.org. You'll find a bunch of them.
And for those who can't do that, do you happen to know where they are?
I don't. You have Horst-Schneider's Pharmacy. Go to Horst-Schneider's.
Okay, but that's not really downtown. Is there anything in the downtown area that you know of? Like at the Metro?
I don't know. You have to look on the website.
Thank you, Steve Plage. So Food Not Bombs is serving food. What you got today for the food?
We have pasta, beans, and salad, and some greens, and some broccoli, and some bread, and a little bit of dessert.
What kind of dessert? That always interests me.
They're chocolate croissants and hot cross buns.
Boy, I better stay away from this table, I'll tell you.
Cross Barranco especially.
Sorry?
Awesome.
Oh, yeah, for sure.
Oh, no, we're a team here.
So how many people are you prepared to serve? How much food do you actually have in terms of how many people could you feed?
We serve about up to 50, usually.
Uh-huh. No, you're usually here for about an hour and a half, sometimes less, starting at 4 o'clock every Saturday.
Yes.
And today is a kind of foul weather, although it's not raining heavily yet.
Yes, it's a little bit rainy, so we actually moved up to the awning on the porch of the post office.
So you haven't been at this spot, which is in the corner, nicely removed from any kind of blockage for about a month and a half, right?
That's correct.
You're at the top of the steps. And why are you here? Are you challenging the post office? You have something against our postal officials?
We are staying out of the rain.
And have you been told to move along yet?
Yes, we have.
And who told you that?
I'm not exactly sure who that gentleman was who told us.
The same original fellow, the little short weekend jefe.
He came out and he didn't take any food?
He didn't take anything.
And what did this man say? You didn't hear it yourself.
I heard it. He just said that we know we're not supposed to be here and that we need to leave, and he's going to call the cops.
And that was how long ago?
It was at 4, whenever we first started.
It's about 4:20 now.
Okay.
All right. Well, I see we also have a man videoing, and we have a Citizens Council on Homelessness Friday at 6:30, beginning April 5th at Loudoun Nelson Center, 301 Center. Any quick comments on this, Mr. Flyer Distributor?
Let's see. I've been trying to build a homeless self-help organization, and this is to draw in a bunch of people from the local citizens, and hopefully they have some clout, maybe some money too, and we can help to get this nonprofit launched. We need a place to operate from, and this is pretty important. But also, I've been already proposed the idea of having an encampment at in the Pogo Nip for the homeless garden project. Hasn't done what they were supposed to do, so that land's available. And I, but the idea is we build a homeless self-help organization. That has a non-profit and for-profit funding channels, and with this we can build our own eco-village and have our own for-profit business.
Monica Martinez naturally is a big supporter, right?
Monica Martinez, of course, is, as mentioned before, the head of the Homeless Lack of Services Center, and I was speaking sarcastically. I haven't heard of her supporting anything like a campground, which would be an immediate response to the need for people to have a safe place to sleep, a safe place to take a dump, a safe place to lessen the hysteria of the surrounding community. Seem to want to blame homeless people for everything from needles to a bicycle theft to grubby and angry panhandling to cluttering up the sidewalk and so forth.
The executive director of the Homeless Lack of Services Center.
That's pretty much what it is. She kind of represents a lot of other works in league with a lot of other people who depend upon homeless people. And that's why it's necessary to have a homeless self-help organization so we can do this ourselves. The professionals who feast off this $2 billion a year funding for homelessness, there doesn't seem to be a lot of effort on their part to demonstrate any sort of a long-term affordable housing model, or not long term, but a broad enough affordable housing model that could bring an end to homelessness. When you have people who are building careers on it, it really kind of delays the prospect of ending it.
Now, have you been to Brent Adams' Wednesday afternoon sanctuary campground meeting?
Yeah, I went to one of them.
What do you think of that effort?
Well, like with a lot of other stuff, just people intellectualizing, they don't really have a plan and they're not interested in hearing of a plan. There's a lot of competition and a lot of ego involved in this. This is something I find.
Now, are you outside yourself?
Yeah, I lived outside a long time.
And you slept outside last night?
Yep.
And what kind of, how have the police been treating you?
Well, I don't get hassled too much. I kind of pick places where I use the I Ching a lot to check out where I sleep at.
We're going to pause here because we have an incoming call. Hi there, you're on Free Radio.
Yeah, it's David Silva. You know, it's really encouraging to hear about a homeless self-help group. I think that's the kind of way we have to go. But I just wanted to call because earlier you were talking about Take Back Santa Cruz, and all I can say, Santa Cruz, if you're listening, Take Back Santa Cruz, the Take Backies, shame, 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 shame that we have an organization to act. Its whole premise of every action is just shameful. Thank you, Robert.
Thank you, David. Yeah, although as I've also said, my real scorn and anger and the focus of my opposition is mainly on the institutions of government that are even better funded than Take Back Santa Cruz, who for years have initiated and instituted and implemented anti-homeless laws and then maintain minor programs that provide a kind of a little bit more than token assistance, but certainly significantly less than a real addressing of the problem. There's, by the way, a homeless study session coming up, I think mainly a kind of an attempt to a defensive response, or maybe a response to collude with Take Back Santa Cruz, being put on by the city council. Councilmember Micah Posner got in touch with a couple of us and talked to us about, he had some questions, trying to kind of mine our own thoughts on the needs of homeless folks, insofar as a lot of us have been working on the, at least the civil rights aspect of this issue for a couple of decades at least. And there is a city council study session coming down the pike. Of course, we'll see where that one goes, except I would say don't hold your breath, do your own independent organizing. And what's happening shortly is there'll be 100 people who are going to be dumped out of the Winter Armory shelter on April 15th. That's coming right up. Also on April 8th, here's a quick note, there will be an 8 a.m. Status hearing on the Santa Cruz 11. It's an attempt to specify, kind of to come to catch up with, will the trials begin in May as scheduled? These long trials of four individuals accused of essentially being seen in a bank building that was long vacant, owned and leased by the criminal bankster Wells Fargo. The Santa Cruz 11, originally there were 11 of us. I was one of them. Seven were dropped because in spite of spending probably over $100,000 in prosecuting us over the last year, they couldn't find enough evidence to even get the case into a jury because there was no evidence that we had done anything that was criminal. I mean, they're claiming that these four remaining defendants, Brent Adams, Gabriella Ripley Phipps, Angel Alcantara, and Cameron Lorando, actually, they aren't claiming they vandalized anything, although there was some vandalism done apparently in this building. They're claiming that their presence there makes them responsible for all the vandalism, though there were several hundred people in and out of that building. It's a completely politically motivated and absurd prosecution, which, again, will be coming up for an 8 a.m. hearing on Monday. I guess that's April 8th, and I'll probably be there to see what's cooking. The attorneys for these four people are trying to get a writ from a higher court to have this whole thing thrown out, and I hope they're successful, for sure. You're listening right now to the Saturday series of interviews that happened last Saturday at the post office in downtown Santa Cruz, where Food Not Bombs regularly serves on the sidewalk, but since it was raining, they went up the steps and placed themselves in an out-of-the-way area in the corner under the post office eaves, at which point they were told they had to leave or be arrested. There was a certain amount of tension in the air, and I was doing interviews in that situation.
That helps me get some advantage, so I don't really get hassled too much. But
the I Ching is your solution to the police harassment problem.
No, well, the I Ching is if you trace the origins of Chinese history, you find the I Ching in the origins of Chinese history. If you're looking into computers, Leibniz was influenced by.
You haven't gotten any tickets then recently.
No, I haven't gotten a ticket in about 30 years.
Very good, very good.
So when I did get arrested, they locked me up, and it was
they
funny.
Being who?
The cops. But
which cops? Where?
Berkeley cops. But But the police report was kind of funny. It said, what did the suspect say? And he had written, what do you want? And where it said weapons and other accessories, I was armed with a blanket and a sleeping bag. But that's sufficient to use war crimes to stop that kind of behavior.
We have been talking with
Daryl Blair. But
thank you, Daryl Blair.
There's a whole lot more that can be said. About
there probably is, but we'll be talking to you later, perhaps.
You know, one thing that really feels, I feel like the most important thing besides all those things is the deeper issue, which is like a deepening rift between people's empathy and people's consumption habits.
Deepening rift between
people's empathy and their consumption habits, and then how they choose to respond to and interpret the actions of people who have either made this life decision to like live on the streets or be transient.
Now, are you one of those individuals?
Mm-hmm.
And how long have you been on the streets?
Well, I'm not really on the street right now. I'm sort of traveling on the street, and I have a home place, a home to go back to if I choose to.
How long have you been in Santa Cruz?
I've only been in Santa Cruz for 5 days, 5 or 6 days.
And what's your reaction to the town?
Well, I mean, there's a lot more going on here than I thought in some ways.
What have you found that's going on of your...
Great, like some co-ops that could be doing more than they're doing. Some like great resources for people trying to be active in the community and to make it more self-sufficient and more like connected and harmonic and
have
all that.
Have you been staying in any of these collectives?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I've been staying in a co-op owned by NASCO. And it's great. But other than that, I sort of see that Santa Cruz isn't really what people like to think of it as. I mean, an example of that is just the amount of restrictions and how detailed the restrictions go as far as what gets people tickets and, like, what counts as breaking an ordinance, you know?
You've gotten tickets yourself?
No, but I have a friend who just graduated from his high school as the valedictorian, and then he
step under the evening. I noticed the rain is beginning again. Let's step up here. Go ahead with what you say. Your friend is, you're saying?
He basically just graduated from high school as the valedictorian, and he was involved in a bunch of other like great community things. Went to school on the East Coast for engineering, came out here, decided to start traveling and seeing the world and figuring out who he was. And within like 3 days of being in Santa Cruz, he got like, the cops threatened him for like 6 or 7 different tickets.
Well, what kinds of crimes?
Just like, he sat down with some people he had just met who were playing music, and he's a musician, and they sat down and he wanted to hear with their music and vice versa. Sat down and they happened to be like within a certain amount of feet.
14 feet of a building?
Or a parking of an ATM machine.
Not 50 feet of an ATM machine.
Mm-hmm. As well as like from a parking meter or something, or I'm not sure exactly, but there was just, I don't know, I guess it just sort of is an indicator that although there might be a lot of great diverse culture here and a lot of amazing things to get into and
some
great
are doing their best to stamp it out or restrict it to what is acceptable to the SCPD.
There are many other places that are ripe for like the type of populations that wander through Santa Cruz looking for something but just notice the big riff and notice the harsh mentalities towards the transient lifestyle.
Did you come here to use drugs? Perhaps.
No, I came here.
It was a wonderful, free-loving, living place where you could do whatever you wanted?
No, I more just thought that I could live a healthy, sustainable lifestyle and meet interesting
people. Without paying any rent, without getting work, perhaps?
Yeah, I mean, but still giving back to the community. I mean, there's so many people out there that might give their fair share of their taxes, but what do they give to the community? And what do they give to people on a person-to-person basis? How much of themselves do they show to other people, and how much of other people do they even want to see or know about or think about? How much of other people's lifestyles threaten their sense of security or whatever? whatever.
We've been talking with
Nikita.
Thank you, Nikita. Anything you want to add before I leave you with your salad or whatever that strange mixture of num-nums is?
Awesome. No, I think I've said everything that I wanted to say that came to my mind in these few moments.
Thank you, Nikita.
You too.
And a few moments before you heard Nikita, there was Daryl Blair talking about his own experiences with the Homeless Lack of Services Center. Daryl's been trying to establish a nonprofit for homeless assistance for a while, but his main approach to doing that is simply to run around announcing that's a good idea, which, I mean, I may be doing something similar when I talk about the good ideas of restoring civil rights for homeless people, but I guess in some way you've got to go a little further. He's putting out a flyer, which I want to note, announces the formation of the Citizens Council on Homelessness to discuss a comprehensive plan to address homelessness is practicable, affordable, and humane. It's going to be meeting Fridays, I guess that's tomorrow, at 6:30 p.m. at Loudon Nelson Center, beginning, that's April 5th. And Loudon Nelson Center is at 301 Center Street, for those who don't know. And room will be to be announced. Talks about eco-village, income from agriculture, light manufacturing, financial autonomy, moves street people from homelessness to self-help. Reduce the need for public support of subsidized housing, food stamps, Medicare, extra police, blah, blah, blah. And I say blah, 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 you know, because I have heard these kinds of proposals many times, and they aren't bad ideas. The question is, can you mobilize enough people to get behind them? And also, will they respond, be a quick enough response to actually meet the needs of people who are facing the kind of rainy night we faced last night? I mean, I know, for example, Freedom is leading a campsite now. She's setting up people. Admittedly, it's a surreptitious campsite. She has to find places to go. And she's getting sick. I ran to her last night on the street. She was coughing. She was ill. But she was still trying to lead people to a group, to find immediate community in her campsite. And I just hats off to her. And Brent Adams is working also to on a longer-term plan with Jay of Occupy Santa Cruz on that issue. He meets every Wednesday at 289 Coral Street behind the, said, look for the dragon and go to the back of the building. It's 289 Coral Street at 6 o'clock on Wednesday evenings. So there's various people meeting about it. Occupy Santa Cruz will be meeting on, usually they meet on Saturday at 5:30. Actually, invariably they've been meeting right after the Food Not Bombs event that you've been hearing on the air from last Saturday. But in the studio with me, who just sort of snuck in only an hour and a half later than I expected, is well-rested Courtney, whose last name I sure don't know. But what is your last name, Courtney?
Hansen.
Courtney Hansen. You are a student?
I'm a student at UCSC, and I'm an organizer in Simbata.
And actually, I should let you know that for the first 20 minutes of the show, I actually read from your new zine, Sin Baras, Without Bars, and I read about the history of the Santa Cruz County jail system and your outrageous allegations. This is some sort of plot to maintain the privileges of the ruling class through a form of superiority, whether it's racial, economic, who knows, patriarchal isn't a word that you guys used or you gals used. I notice it seems to be a matriarchal organization. There's a lot of women involved. I saw one man, actually, when came to the Huff meeting. I also announced that, your protest coming up tomorrow, I should say Saturday, 4 o'clock, town clock. New member of speakers there for 45 minutes, march around town to the jail. Another 45 minutes worth of speakers, as I understand it. And you'll be, of course, breaking into the jail, freeing the prisoners, and setting up a liberated area. Just kidding about the last, of course. Is there more we should know? What's been happening?
Yeah, I would love to talk a little bit more about what's going to be going on Saturday, because there's really an amazing lineup of speakers. So we're going to be having a houseless man that lives in Santa Cruz speak about his personal experience of being inside the county jail and how torturous those conditions are. And then there's going to be speakers on the struggle for immigrant rights and how this ties into anti-prison work. Personal narratives of growing up with a mother incarcerated. There's a lot of speakers coming up from the Bay Area. We have Jesse from Critical Resistance speaking about the campaign to stop the jail expansion in San Mateo. And she will also be explaining the movement for prison abolition and what it means to look at these issues through an abolitionist lens. We also have people from HUF speaking, Becky from Homeless United for Friendship and Freedom, which is just so relevant to what's happening in the jail right now. And then also Penny and Manuel from Prisoner Hunger Strike Solidarity. So they'll be talking to us about prisoners who went on hunger strike all throughout California 2 summers ago, and that hunger strike is going to resume on July 8th. And that will be where we end at the county jail, because we want folks inside to hear that this resistance is happening. So it's very inspiring.
Hear, hear. Do you have any actual, I think I asked you this a couple weeks ago, do you have any inmates in jail who you're regularly communicating with?
We don't as of now, and that's definitely a priority. And it takes some work to kind of make that happen. So we've set up a P.O. box. That we'll put on blast pretty soon here, and we've started the process. We know some folks working inside, but it's a long process.
So you haven't sent in any ringers who've been doing criminal behavior like sleeping in front of a county jail, then getting spirited into the jail, and then sending out secret missives, possibly in cakes with files. And I guess I'll just send those into the jail. One of the issues I also mentioned you talked about were the deaths of 4 individuals, somewhat coincident with, though I guess 1 or 2 of them was before the actual privatization took effect. I think it was voted before the deaths, but it actually took effect after at least 1 of the deaths. Of course, there's this massive overcrowding going on in the jail system, which the feds have insisted be stopped because it's no doubt setting them up for all kinds of lawsuits. I don't think they give a shit who dies in the jails. They're just sort of waste disposal units where human beings, of course, are regarded as, to be, they're actually very productive units of profit for those who make jails and those who staff them. And I guess they also serve to depress wages, and they also serve, they have a number of very useful functions in our society. I don't see why you're attacking our prison system.
You seem to understand why.
Somewhat.
So you touched on overcrowding with realignment and the Supreme Court decision to reduce overcrowding in state facilities, which we know really isn't reducing overcrowding. It's moving bodies around and into the county jails.
Which are even less able to deal with long-term. I mean, I'm not saying that the state facilities are. They obviously aren't. Mm-hmm. But they're theoretically being funded for that purpose, whereas county jails are there for a lesser period of time for the more still serious offenses, such as, smoking marijuana or sitting down on the sidewalk at the wrong time 3 times. They cut into our business economy here in Santa Cruz, and not to mention the needle users. We've got to watch out for the needle users. Let's not forget the needle users, okay? And the children, not the children. Let's not forget the children, okay? Go ahead.
So I think we're trying to touch on a lot of things with this action. For one, we do want to make these deaths visible. We want people to know we have a jail in Santa Cruz because, it's typical that they hide them with trees, and people sort of forget that everywhere in our counties and our cities we're caging large amounts of people. And then we also want to highlight the broader context of overcrowding and lack of health care inside California jails and prisons, and create a space for community empowerment. So we see what happens if a bunch of us come together at a grassroots level and put some demands forth. So one of those definitely revolves around pretrial detention, because so many folks in the county jail here in Santa Cruz and statewide are held in the county jails on pretrial detention.
Well, it's a nice way of saving money, because that way people plead to charges rather than drag out these things into jury trials that are very costly and also involve wasting everyone's time when we know these people are guilty. Why would they not be arrested if they were guilty? You got to see things from the law enforcement approach.
Yeah, I see what you're
trying
doing
to
that.
Take a more balanced view of these things. Go ahead.
Don't want to be biased or anything as a prison abolitionist.
No. So, I also asked you at one point, I think, or maybe I asked Tosh, your associate, to dig up stats on the number of deaths in the county jails in the last 5 years so we could see the wonderful work the state-run medical system or the county-run mm-hmm. medical system has done compared to the shoddy, capitalist-oriented private system.
Mm-hmm.
In other words, I actually have no idea how these two compare. I'm suspicious of private systems generally because I think they're more prone to cut costs, but then they have the occasional Good Samaritan who wants to, provide a chocolate under the pillow of the... probably not, though, in our jail. You have any sense of that? Anything? You got those figures?
Yeah. I mean, I do have... What I can tell you is that in California, we can see a huge spike. And this is California altogether. But in 1980, there were 127 deaths that year. And in 2010, there were 447. So that's a huge jump right there.
447. But how many prisoners were there in 1980 compared with 2010?
You could read our zine to find that out.
I have your zine here online, actually. But if you've got to consider a percentage. We have to triage these prisoners. After all, it is a public expense keeping these murderers around and these marijuana smokers. Do we really need their kind? I haven't thought of that, have you?
Need what kind?
Their kind. My backyard was broken into and they took my bicycle. And I'm not going to forgive them for that. Is that clear? We've got to do something about this. Why aren't you out there doing something? Sorry, I'm getting carried away here. Actually, that is a concern. I actually have talked to bike thefts. Are actually the one stat I have noticed that has gone up extensively in the last couple of years.
Mm-hmm.
Although I had an interesting interview with... Dreamcatcher, a local homeless guy, who tells me that he thinks that the bike rings that steal bikes are actually from out of town and don't involve the local homeless community particularly.
I don't know who's stealing bikes, but I would look at it as, the vast majority of people incarcerated are there for nonviolent crimes, such as stealing. And then we have to ask a deeper question, which is why are people stealing? Why are people being pushed to do that?
Inherently evil, as my pastor tells
figured
me.
Figured that would be your answer.
Well, as of course. I mean, after all, there is an evil is an active force in the world. Haven't you heard of the devil? No, you probably haven't. One of those. That's Satan's greatest weapon. He thinks you don't believe in him. Mm-hmm. You see, that's actually though. Again, I really am serious about that. That stat you have in the 1980, 127 died statewide, but you don't have the local stats, do you?
Mm-mm.
That's what I really want to see, because I've been very interested in the local Santa Cruz situation. I know you're forming powerful links with other organizations throughout the state, which is great. And you're also even better focusing on this local jail, It would be nice for you to have do you have figures on how many prisoners are in a local jail for nonviolent crimes, for example?
I don't have that off the top of my head, but I do have stats on the pretrial detention.
Tell me about that.
And statewide it's 71%. Jail beds are occupied by pretrial inmates. And in Santa Cruz, a stat from 2011 was 56%. And the problem with numbers like these, is that the county and the folks that run the prison system will act like that, is an impressive number, that our number is less. And this is also what they said about the deaths was, we have at least less deaths happening here than the state average, as if that's something to be proud of.
Well, yeah. Have you confronted our good sheriff, Phil Wowak, with these figures and asked to have a chat with him around these issues?
We have not, but we definitely plan to speak with him.
Phil is a very amiable fellow. As you know, he's been trying to make sure that the immigrants don't overrun the county by shipping them out back to Guatemala or wherever they came from.
Mm-hmm.
In spite of, some say that there's minor crimes, they shouldn't be breaking up families. But we know that these people are illegals, right?
No.
No. Yeah, I knew you'd say that. So, I'm just wondering. I mean, first of all, I think you're doing the right thing. Often people will go to these officials first and say, why is this? And you'll get a whole line of horse shit, or you'll get a lot of explanations, or you'll get, evasions, or we're doing a study on this, and you'll get a few, we'll come back to you in a couple of years. Whereas if you form your power base first and you get enough people to come with a loud enough voice, then they suddenly, take you a bit more seriously, or at least if they don't, it becomes clear to others watching that they may have something to hide. So, mm-hmm. I experienced that today when I went to City Hall. I went there actually for another reason, because I usually get these discs about the City Council, even though it is now, although for anybody who would want to watch this, it's quite a painful process and boring. You can watch the actual City Council meetings online, and they are archived. If you call them up and make them put them online, I've had to do that twice to get City Council meetings onto the website. They, for some reason, they fall behind. But I've asked to make discs of these so that I can have them as a record later on. There's been an issue that I've raised, and I know this is a little subsidiary, but unfortunately you're on my show now.
Mm-hmm.
The issue of bikes around, bikes for poor people. Santa Cruz Police Department cut off the bike church from receiving bikes about a year ago. Didn't say why, they just did it. And this has been a matter of concern to people like Steve Schnarr and others. I think Councilmember Micah Posner has sort of timidly weighed in on this issue himself. And we're trying to find out why they were transferred to the Bike Dojo, which is a for-profit bike organization, which may have some connection with nonprofits too. But why did the police department make these decisions, or did they? And so the woman who's handling all this is a woman named Tina Scholl, who's married to Supervisor Zach Friend, who is a notorious propagandist previously for the Santa Cruz Police Department.
Mm-hmm.
I had numerous causes to express my concern about how he described homeless rallies, using the old poo-poo pee-pee approach in describing people's human rights when it's the city that's closing down the bathrooms at night and not allowing people access to them.
Mm-hmm.
Then you start screaming about the poo-poo and the pee-pee, sort of like shutting down the needle exchange and then screaming, there are needles everywhere! That's a kind of an interesting approach,
mm-hmm.
kind of disreputable in some respects, but not if you're looking to create more hysteria, and that's usually very effective, could be very effective. Anyway, I talked to Tina happened to be in the office. She came out, and she said, Robert, how have you been? I think she was trying to stop me from talking to one of her aides and or one of the other staff there. And because I was trying to inquire, is it truly running off people from sleeping on the lawn at City Hall during the day? I mean, we know it's illegal at night, of course, because homeless people should not be allowed to sleep at night. They should walk around all night. That's kind of one of the basic tenets of the Santa Cruz law. It's good for that, good exercise, and, not quite sure what the rationale is, except, of course, it drives them away. But during the day, it's been legal to sleep, and in fact, that's been the excuse of Judge Tom Kelly when he said the sleeping ban was constitutional. He said, well, they can sleep during the day, can't they? That was his response. Well, wow. They can't sleep during the day, apparently, anymore at City Hall. I've been getting reports they've been driven away. And I asked one of the employees, is this true? And she said, well, it is true that the security guards have been dealing with problems of homeless people harassing other people. And of course I should have interrupted her and said, no, I'm talking about people lying on the grass sleeping. I know snoring can be disturbing as you walk by, but and those security guards do other things. They find people's wallets and they help find lost keys. One of our employees lost their keys. I said, very nice. Anyway, Tina interrupted this conversation, and she's the individual who's in charge of why aren't these bikes, which are being confiscated by the police department, being given back to a nonprofit distributor, which the bike church is. It's been doing this for 6 years. It was stopped from doing it. And I said, who made the decision to stop this? She said, we're working on that issue, was of course what she told me.
Hear that one a lot.
The energy that I put into talking to her, which is really kind of foolish, I see you instead and other activists who are working on this issue talking to activists who are actually potentially making a difference.
Mm-hmm.
And I want to thank you for doing that and not following in the weary, worn, tired treads of some of us old goats who keep, you know, grazing at City Hall. Actually, I went in there just simply to pay some money for these discs. I found out they hadn't even made the discs, so I had to remind them, well, you know, let's get cracking, you know. And they'd say, oh, yeah, we'll get to it. I said, yeah, fine. So I'm glad that your focus is on getting people together to empower them first. That's mm-hmm. something that people, for example, who are homeless activists wanting to establish a campground mm-hmm. don't really seem to... I don't have a very good handle on it. I don't have a very good handle on organizing homeless people. It's a really hard thing to do because homeless people want to keep a low profile. They do not want to be targeted. Mm-hmm. And they want to make their private arrangements with the police because police officers will leave some people alone and then target others,
mm-hmm.
particularly since the laws are so broadly framed that they can do that with some impunity. So to get some kind of solidarity is a real challenge. I imagine in prisons it may be similarly difficult. Those are even more restricted circumstances, and it's a little, you know, I think, as I mentioned 3 weeks ago, you need people inside the jails.
Mm-hmm.
And I guess... you're devising a strategy for mm-hmm. going into... You wish, is this a secret strategy? You wish to tell us what you're going to be doing?
Well, I think it'd be best to probably wait until we have, you know, a more succinct update. Where it's definitely in the works. We kind of have our feelers out. We're talking to a lot of different people who have access to inmates in various ways. And we're setting up a P.O. box to make it easy for folks inside to communicate with us. But that is not yet in place.
Just for those who are interested, the final outcome of this visit that I did to City Hall today was Don Lane, former mayor and longtime city council member, also previously on the board of directors of the Homeless Lack of Services Center, and somewhat tepid defender of homeless services, and definitely a non-defender of homeless people's rights, except in the most abstract way, because he voted for every single anti-homeless bill that came down the pike. He was in the office today, and first I was discouraged from trying to reach him. I said, no, let's try and give him a call. Maybe he'll answer the phone. And he did when we called him. And I said, you know, you are the person who really was the intermediary getting back to this issue of... It may seem trivial and picky when you talk about this bicycle situation, but I see the police department as playing a major role in... Some people see it as a neutral group. I don't. People like Steve Clark, who is a deputy chief, has specifically, for example, denounced needle exchange and essentially smeared it with false claims about its creating dangerous situations. And he's also a smeared activist. He has a very special right-wing political agenda. I mean, he has a perfect right to his opinions. I think he should be giving them from a different forum. But in any case, he does give them. In any case, the police department at some point decided that the bike church, which is right next to the Sub Rosa Cafe, which does not... It says police officers are not welcome in here. Most of these signs downtown you'll see was saying, we love our police mm-hmm. department, welcome police, Butchie Baker, we love you, and all this stuff. Not looking too closely into Baker's history,
mm-hmm.
But Sub Rosa doesn't welcome the police department. They are an anarchist collective that believes that this kind of violent, authoritarian class repression that the police department frequently represents, if not often, well, the same thing, isn't good. So because they're right next door, this apparently was one of the reasons that the police department decided they would stop giving bikes to the bike church up right at that end of town.
Mm.
And this meant, you know, well, fine, give them to somebody else so they can be distributed. Okay, you know, it's not okay, really. It's a political
mm-hmm,
decision.
Totally.
Shouldn't be happening. But, you know, instead they gave them to, I'm told, the Bike Dojo, whose partner has, one of the owners has a connection with Hillary Bryant's mm-hmm. spouse. And, you know, that doesn't sound, you know, quite on the up and up. And when I said that to Tina earlier today, she said, that's not true, but she wouldn't go into details. You know, I said, well, correct me. Please correct me. She chose, I haven't got the time to do that. I'm really very busy. She kept walking back and forth and didn't seem as busy as she might have been. But in any case, the real issue for me was not just who made the decision to do this kind of shit. And essentially, it's sort of like destroying needle exchange and moving it out of the area. It's following a political right-wing agenda. But who's going to make sure that these bikes start getting out to the people? And she didn't have an answer. We're just working on it, was her answer. I said, you've been saying this for 9 months. So specifically, what's the roadblock? Well, we can't talk to you about that. So I've also asked for the emails for this, and I think you've probably heard me talk about this. I've asked to get the emails that indicate, yes, public records, what kind of discussion has been going on, at least for members of the community, staff to staff. It doesn't involve personnel. It doesn't involve necessarily working groups, but it involves real decisions that were made at a certain point in time. I asked, they wouldn't give me the email, or they said there are no emails. And I said, okay, well then, since you don't seem to know what their emails about this bike church situation, this bike distribution with the police department, give me all the emails of the mayor for the last year. I'd like to see copies of them. They gave me 3 emails, and they said that's all the emails that Hillary Bryant has issued for the last year to and from her and all the people emailing in. Now, I know that's not true because I sent her more than 3 emails. So there must be a problem there. Anyway, I delight in, you know, denouncing this kind of stuff. But again, I hope people come to this rally, as I will, on Saturday at 4 o'clock at the town clock. I believe we may be having some... Joe Schultz may be providing hot coffee. If we can get somebody who wants to volunteer to serve it, you might want to look in your group and see if you can find somebody to help. And it's going to be an interesting thing. I would ask anybody who wants to call in the next 15 minutes... if you've been a prisoner in the Santa Cruz County Jail at any time, or particularly recently, if you want to talk about the conditions there, if you're a supporter, if you think it's a good jail, and you know you think we're perhaps this organization is coming down a little too hard on the Santa Cruz County Jail, I mean, seriously, you know, speak your piece. I'll hold back my fulminations, you know, and you can say what you think. 427-3772. 427-3772 is the call. Have you been jailed lately? Has a friend of yours been jailed? Has it been a positive or negative experience? Some people say that, you know, getting in jail helps you to get clean. If you are a heroin addict or a meth addict or a cocaine user, somehow being, I guess that's more about prison than jail, though in prison I understand drugs can be had, rumor has it. And some people talk about the positive aspects, the rehabilitating aspects of the prison system, which kind of gives me a slight ache in my stomach. I'm not sure why. But there is that issue. Anything else you want to say before I roll into some of these last tapes? I'm never going to get through them. And I guess I'll have to be returning on Sunday at 9:30 to give you some more of that, all you loyal listeners who have been flooding me with phone calls, I would note. Go ahead.
Yeah, Gordon. Thank you so much for having me again. We're going to have a Brass Liberation Orchestra with us on the march, which is a group that travels around and shows up to protest to support and provide energy and music and go along with the chants and stuff, so that's going to be pretty amazing. Food Not Bombs might be bringing their meal over to the clock tower us.
They're normally across the street. In fact, we're listening to a Food Not Bombs event from last week right here.
Great. Yeah, I've been in touch with them. And then, you know, this is only the beginning. It's going to be a really incredible day. And a few weeks after this event, we're planning to have a sort of community forum at the Resource Center for Nonviolence. So we'll have information about that at the rally.
Good.
Yep, 4 p.m. at the clock tower this Saturday, April 6th. And also, we just put our zine out online and updated it with a Spanish version. So you can find that at www.sinbarras.wordpress.com. Thanks.
Sounds good. You can hang if you have some comments and some thoughts about what you're hearing on the radio here, or in the studio, coming through here. We're listening to some commentary from interviews at last Saturday's event at Food Not Bombs, when the police did show, and because people were under the eaves of the post office, occupying the sacred postal top step, which, as we know, is only reserved for those who have the explicit permission of the postal inspector. Not quite sure. Well, let's hear some more.
All right, well, I'm here interviewing a man who's been on the road. Your name, sir?
Rusty Shackelford.
And where are you from?
Connecticut.
And what brings you to this questionable burg in the rain?
Food not bombs. I didn't realize there was a GA, but food not bombs.
Yeah, and so you've been different places. I've been told you're a man with many a story to tell.
Maybe like two.
And what are those stories, and why should we listen to them?
All right, the first story is about Pittsburgh, because I love Pittsburgh. And the second story is not on the top of my head, so I'm only going to tell you one. Nope. Now, the reason it's so interesting is it is just a class A clowning. Essentially, in Pittsburgh, the People's Park, Point Park out of PNC Bank, they'll fact check me if I get it wrong. I'm sorry, all my friends there. Either way, the first thing that they did was they built a Trojan horse in the middle of the park once they realized they were going to get evicted. However, the Pittsburgh police did not do a single thing to stop them. They just waited until they left after the trial ended. And they would walk around playing dubstep on their stereos every single march to harass Pittsburgh police. It was pretty much just a gigantic anti-Pittsburgh police type thing. It was great in that respect. However, during the trial, they decided to say, "We're no strangers to love. You know the rules, and so do I." And it'll only really be a pop culture reference to, say, like 10 or 20 million people out of all 7 billion in the world right now, but it made me laugh personally on the inside and on the outside. Because
what made you laugh?
We're no strangers to love. You know the rules, and so do
Who
I.
Who said this?
Rick Astley.
And who's that?
Pop singer in the 80s.
Oh, and I'm sorry. So what the significance of all this is what?
Clowning. Old yippie tactic where whenever you were in a...
Who was clowning who? Let me understand that.
Oh, Occupy Pittsburgh was clowning the court system.
And where were they when this clowning happened?
The trial, I believe, a courthouse in Pittsburgh.
Okay, and what were they being charged with?
They were trying to shut down the park.
And what was this, a misdemeanor or an infraction?
It was essentially a cease and desist order, from what I can gather, just to get all the people out of the park.
Did they get all the people out of the park?
Yeah. After they put down garlic and fenced it off, yeah.
And that's when did you leave the park? And what was the last you heard about this?
Oh, I didn't. The last thing I heard about it was that they decided there were vampires in the park, so they pretty much planted garlic around the entire thing, and then they just walked off and said, "Fuck it, it's over."
This was the clowners or the police?
No, this is Occupy Pittsburgh. Okay. Pretty much whoever was left, like, was drunk constantly the entire time. And
I see. And so homeless people in Pittsburgh had a close connection with Occupy Pittsburgh?
From what I can tell, the people that traveled there ended up becoming homeless for a while, because once I got there after the park was shut down, everyone was worried about housing, as in New York. But either way, it pretty much died down, and then whoever was organizing in Pittsburgh just went to do their own thing afterwards.
I see. Have you told us pretty much the nub of the story, or are there some more details you'd like to pass on?
A few more details would be the community art project with the Trojan horse was just kind of a drunk wager that they wouldn't do anything. So on YouTube, there's a very large, built-up, constructed horse with, like, 10 or 20 people on it. And it looked really stupid, but it was just so great that the police didn't shut it down until after.
This was with a large horse placed in the park, or?
About two stories tall.
Ah. And how long was it there for?
Until they shut it down.
Which was, you have no idea how long that was?
End of February 2012.
Fair enough. Well, welcome to Santa Cruz. More horsing around, the better. And we've been talking with
Rusty Shackelford.
Thanks, Rusty.
And, you know, here in Santa Cruz, the entire courthouse area was declared and is still out of bounds after 6 o'clock at night, from 6 to 6 sorry, from 7 to 7, it is illegal to be in on the courthouse steps, on the courthouse lawn, areas that you would have thought, for example, if you're a protester and you want to sit there all night with a sign, that's the seat of government, that's the place you should be allowed to be. But not in Santa Cruz, again, because there was such a long and very impressive protest there with the Occupy Santa Cruz. The guy who's describing this protest, I guess Rusty Shackelberg, I think, if it was his name. I didn't interrupt him to get the more concrete, specific details, but you know, I think clowning is a great idea, but it's no joke. When I mean, apparently the Occupy Pittsburgh people took it much more lightly, that they were driven out of the park, they didn't come back, and that actually was generally the case throughout the country. People who took these parks or camped outside public buildings, when they were driven by the police, with a few exceptions, stayed driven away. They essentially accepted the dictates, unlike, let's say, the people in Tahrir Square in Egypt in 2011, or the people in, you know, Tunisia, or people in other Middle Eastern countries. Of course, there were hundreds of thousands of them, and obviously you feel a bit more empowered even when they're coming around beating you up, I guess, if you have other people there. But Occupy Wall Street started small, fairly relatively small, and spread amazingly all over the country. But maybe it was as thin as it was broad. That's the problem, in the sense that people kind of hope that just by talking they could somehow change things. And not that talking isn't an important component, I guess it's just not the only component. You've got to be prepared to do other things. And not that I have the answers here, but perhaps you can find some of the answers by coming to the rally on Saturday at 4 o'clock with Sin Baras, or checking their zine online, or getting in touch with them at their Gmail address, which is...
Yeah, which is sinbaras@gmail.com. So sinbaras@gmail.com. And you can also find that under the contact tab of our website.
And I'm going to prepare to leave a little early here because Uncle Dennis often comes galumping in and shoving my papers aside, rudely addressing me. It's really quite heartbreaking the way I get treated by Uncle Dennis. And so I'm going to try to avoid that confrontation. I so abhor confrontations. Thank you very much, Courtney. We've been talking with Courtney Hansen here, and Courtney can be reached by going to scenebaras@gmail.com or coming on down on Saturday at 4 o'clock to the town clock. Likely there'll be some hot coffee there and some hot talk and a little loud noise to in solidarity with the prisoners later on that afternoon.
Yeah, on that note, you can also bring any sorts of... pots or pans, noisemakers, any of that will be good stuff.
Sorry for those who were trying to hear you and only heard this distant voice because I didn't have your mic up. Yes, bring pots and pans, and this time you can duplicate what the CIA-backed housewives of Chile did in 1973 when they helped overthrow the Allende government, but perhaps from another perspective. thank you for being with me on this edition of Bathroom Spears Broadsides. I'm going to... go out on another one of these local street singers. We'll see if you can tolerate that. If not, I'm sure there are other good shows. And Uncle Dennis will be having some more traditional music when he comes in about, who knows, 2 or 3 minutes, I imagine. Thanks, Courtney. Appreciate your coming in.
Yeah, thanks for having me.
Grab my arm, my bones resist. that dances strong and steady within me. I love your darkness because you let me go there with you. You have no walls to keep me out. You let me know the all of you. Hello there, good looking, good morning to you today. I'm thinking about you, your arms, your eyes, your lips, your smile, your hair, your way you are. Love divine, my favorite dream, I love you so much. You are my face smiling, you are the light in my eyes, I love your touch. So thank you for the shadow, thank you for the stars. Thank you for an open heart full of hope, fear, joy, and sky. Every bit of you is what I love because it's true. There's nothing more beautiful than that to me. And strength, darkness and light, you let me hold these things in you every day and every night. Thanks for letting me know you, your ever changing ways. There is nothing more beautiful than that to me. Thank you for the shadow, thank you for the stars.
And that, I guess, is the end of Robert Norse for tonight. He will, of course, be back next Sunday. Is this your CD here, Robert? Wheel Workers Unite?
No, that's
good. Okay. Well, I'll stick it up here in the new CDs. It looks like a new CD. Anyway, I'm having problems with my CD. Well, we'll figure it out one way or the other. You're listening to Free Radio Santa Cruz, 101.3 FM. I'm Uncle Dennis, and welcome to From the Cream to the Dregs. We are a show of rock and roll, psychedelic, and blues from the 60s, 70s, and beyond right here on Free Radio Santa Cruz, and I am attempting at the moment to get my first track up, but it looks like the CD player is having some problems here. I don't know. Oh, there it is. Enjoy. We'll be right back.
swift for those who fear. Time is too long for those who grieve, and time is too short for those that laugh. And love is too slow for those who wait, and love is too swift for those who fear. Love is too long for those who grieve, and love is too short for those that laugh. But for those who love, but for those who really love, but for those who love, time, sweet time,